Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with the Drake Jason Justice. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to talk to Adam Teichert at 8:30. And then Jarrett Sutton will be in studio with us in the 9 o'clock hour to talk about everything that happened in the NCAA tournament over the weekend, including Kansas, the 1 seed, losing to Arkansas, the 8 seed, 72-71. Mizzou, the 7 seed, got spanked by the 15 seed, Princeton, 78-63, so they're out. But K-State beats Kentucky 75-69, and now they advance to the Sweet 16 in Madison Square Garden, and they have a very nice matchup. They will take on the 7 seed Michigan State after Michigan State sent Marquette, the 2 seed, packing. And then on the other end of the bracket, FAU, the 9 seed, will take on Tennessee, the 4 seed. And so FAU, Tennessee, just look at it that way. One of these teams is going to be in the Final Four. FAU, Tennessee, Kansas State, or Michigan. And I say it's going to be Kansas State. I was just sent the opening lines. Tell me the only lower seed that is favored in the Sweet 16.
Oh, man, I need to look at my bracket.
We would help you to look at the Sweet 16. You mean read them to you, or are you confused?
Yeah. Let me.
Okay. So they have these things on ESPN where they update the bracket.
They do. Ooh,
look at that. Okay.
I just don't have it open right now.
I'll tell you. All right. Here are the matchups. Number 1, Alabama against number 5, San Diego State.
Alabama's obviously a favorite.
Yeah. Let me tell you what the number is on that.
I'm going to guess 7 points.
Alabama is favored by 7 over San Diego State.
Call me Vegas Nate.
Number 6, Creighton, and number 15, Princeton.
Creighton favored by 4.5.
Creighton is favored by 10.
Ooh. No love for Princeton. All right.
FAU, the 9 seed, and the 4 seed, Tennessee.
Tennessee favored by 2.5.
Tennessee is favored by 5.5. You've gone cold on your...
At least I've got the right team favored.
Right. Number 1, Houston, and number 5, Miami.
Houston favored by 5.
7. Number 3, Xavier, number 2, Texas. Is this the game? Is that the game where the lower seed's favored?
No, Texas is favored in that one by 3.
Texas is favored by 4.5. UConn, Arkansas, the 8 and the 4. Is that the game?
No, UConn favored by 4.
3.5.
Close. All right, close.
Gonzaga, UCLA.
This is it right here. This is it. Gonzaga is favored by 2.5.
UCLA favored by 1.
Damn it. So K-State is the underdog.
K-State, Michigan State, yeah. K-State is a 1-point underdog. That
surprised the hell out of me. No way. No way.
Well, I'm telling you.
Get lost. Get out of here.
K-State is the underdog by a point.
Well, you know, there you go, K-State. You got your motivation right there.
I don't get it.
How could they be underdog? K-State's number 21 in the KenPom. Where's Michigan State? Michigan State's 25. Good matchup. How much are they favored by?
A point.
That's still...
Still, this is the... I thought...
Very silly.
I thought K-State would be the favorite.
Yeah, they should. There. Well, they're the 3 seed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Going against a 7 seed? Mm-hmm. Come on.
So, I mentioned that 3 of 4 of my Final Four are still alive. I have Alabama winning it all. I see nothing. I mean, I think it's going to be a fun matchup against San Diego State. I think Bama wins. I think they'll take on Creighton. Creighton could give them all they want, but I still got Alabama. I still feel comfortable with that pick. In the South and the Midwest, I had Houston going, so there's no reason to change that. Although I think Xavier, Texas will be good. I think it'll be Houston and Texas. I might actually want to go to that game.
Yeah.
The Elite Eight game in Kansas City between Houston and Texas. I think that'll be
on Sunday.
Awesome basketball game. But I'm still good about Houston. In the West, I had Gonzaga.
Yeah.
But Arkansas, UConn, Gonzaga, UCLA, to me, that's an absolute toss-up. Any one of those four teams could make it to the Final Four.
That's the best region.
I have no idea.
That's the best region. Those are all good. Those are all Final Four caliber teams.
And, like, then in the East, my Final Four team, Marquette's out. And so you got FAU, Tennessee, K-State, and Michigan State.
I don't have a single team. Like, if my bracket is similar to yours, I get the same Final Four as you. That is the region that just, I don't have a single team right. I had Purdue, Duke, Kentucky, and Marquette making it to the Sweet 16.
Yeah.
None of them. Not a one.
I got, did I pick K-State? Did I have more faith? I put Kentucky in, dummy. Yeah, I don't have anything. So, but now, I'll stick with another three picks, but now my new fourth pick will be based on what's left, Kansas State.
Why not?
Who do you pick to come out of there?
Probably Kansas State. That game against Michigan State, the fact that they're underdogs in Vegas, that makes me a little nervous, I guess. But I think K-State can use that as motivation. So they can play the nobody believed in us thing. You know, the we weren't supposed to be here thing. I will admit, I don't know Florida Atlantic very well. I haven't really watched.
They're fun to watch.
I watched some of that Memphis game. It was a close game.
And Memphis got screwed because they called the jump ball on that loose ball when Memphis had the ball and called a timeout. And so they got screwed there, I thought. I mean, look, they haven't played a whole lot of great teams. And even here, they beat Memphis and they beat Fairleigh Dickinson to get to the Sweet 16. Just any wins of they won at Florida in their non-con. And there's just not a lot of meat on that bone. And the three losses they have at Ole Miss, they lost by 13, at UAB and at Middle Tennessee State. But that's it. Including the tournament, they're 33-3.
Yeah. I think that's going to be a really interesting game, them and Tennessee, because like you said, Tennessee, they've got an injury that made me pick Duke over them, but they went out and they beat Duke by 13. I think K-State is the best team left out of those four. And so that's why I would pick them to go to the Final Four. And I do think, like, you know, Lebo pointed out the history that K-State's had here recently when they've had things open up for them in the tournament where they've lost to like, Loyola Chicago. This is a new coach, man. I just think Jerome Tang has something that K-State has really missed, which is he's got a swagger to him. You know, like, he's got this. I think he's one of those. There's people in your life, when you're around them, all of a sudden you get filled with confidence. They just have this confidence about them that's contagious. And I feel like Jerome Tang seems to be one of those guys. I mean, he's so confident that he was able to do something that I think is almost always a terrible decision as a coach, which is to tell the fans how to behave, right? Like, he told the K-State fans how to act. And he pulled it off in a way that, like, was endearing. Now, you got to win. You know, you got to do a lot of things. But he just oozes this, like, hey, man, let's love ourselves. Let's be good. Let his players, to me, they play with a free mind. They play and I think that's a hard balance for teams sometimes to strike, is like playing with the freedom out there, but also still playing with the set of expectations and standards. Like, hey, we got to play to this level. But when you're out there, play with confidence. Like, there were a couple shots that Marquise Noel, and I know sometimes Marquise Noel frustrates some K-State fans with some of his shot selection, things like that. But There were a couple threes that, like, there was one three in particular he hit yesterday where he was like 2 or 3 feet beyond the arc. And he had picked up his dribble and he looked around and everybody had just kind of sagged off of him because they were expecting him to pass the ball. So, all right, I'm going to take this shot. And a lot of times I would think, man, that's not in rhythm. I don't know if I like that shot. And he just buried it. And I think that, look, it's a tournament. Anything can happen. But I don't think that the, like, the magnitude of this moment will get to this K-State team. I think that with leaders like Noel and Johnson, I think that they'll be ready to play. I don't think the stage is going to be too big for them. And I think that with Tang, like, he just kind of, you know, the way that he, I mean, Ish Masood hits the one three-pointer he takes in the game. That was a huge shot, and I heard him say after the game, I knew it was going in right when I took it. There just seems to be a confidence, an ease to this K-State team that I think plays really well in the tournament. So I'm with you, man. I think they got a really good shot to go to the final. Look at Shane Summers strutting through
K-State
here right now.
K-State is set up to go to the Final Four.
Hey, that would be something, wouldn't it?
Yep. He's very happy with his purple Cats hoodie on. As for Mizzou and KU, they are not headed to the Final Four. They're headed home. And I will just say what I'll kind of reiterate what I said in the 6 o'clock hour about Mizzou. Look, there's just debate now amongst the Mizzou fans. You know, the season, this wipes away everything that happened. The loss to Princeton was so bad, getting your ass kicked by a 15 seed with a chance to go to the Sweet 16. Same old Mizzou, this sucks. You know, whatever, right? Well, other people are arguing, and I think Gabe DeArmond's one of these people arguing, look, it was a bad loss, but you can't let that erase everything else that happened. For the first time in 13 years, this team won an NCAA tournament game. Had never been to the semifinals of the SEC tournament, did that. Had never finished in the top four in the SEC, did that. You know, beat Illinois, split with Arkansas, beat Kentucky, and accomplished way more than most anyone expected going into the season. But there doesn't have to be a debate about that. It's, to me, it could be both. It absolutely could be both. You can acknowledge that Dennis Gates had a fabulous first year that exceeded all expectations. Nobody thought he was going to win 25 games. Nobody thought that they were going to finish in the top four of the SEC. Nobody thought they'd get to the tournament, much less win a tournament game. And it had been 13 years since they won a tournament game. Now, you should feel good about where the program is headed. And he proved, at least for 1 year, that he was an excellent hire, and he's got the program moving in the right direction. And right now, if you're a Mizzou basketball fan, do you feel better about the program? Do you care more about the program now than you did 12 months ago? Of course you do. That thing had damn near hit rock bottom. And just in 1 year, he turned them into a tournament team and won a tournament game. Now, that does not hide the fact that Saturday's loss was extremely disappointing, not just that they lost to a 15 seed in Princeton, but the way they lost. They had not lost. All their losses were quad one losses to good teams all year long. They didn't have any of these losses where they lost to a bad team. Nate's precious Ken Pom had them in like a 90 or 100 or 150. They didn't have losses to any of those teams. They beat all the teams they were supposed to. And every loss is a quad one loss until Princeton. And on paper, they lost a team that they shouldn't have. They were favored to win the game by 6.5. And not only, it's not even that they lost, they got their ass handed to them. They got beat in every possible way a basketball team could get beat. They got out coached, they got out hustled, they got out passed, they got out shot, they got out everything. Out everything. And so it leaves a terribly bitter taste in your mouth if you're a Mizzou fan. But all that can be true, and you can still acknowledge, you know what? He got this team to that point, and they weren't supposed to get there. But it just sucks because they were given a gift, a golden opportunity to go to the Sweet 16. And they piss it away. And you don't know when you're going to get that opportunity again.
Yeah, but aren't you more optimistic with Dennis Gates as your head coach that you're going to get that opportunity again real soon?
I hope so.
I mean, you don't know for sure.
I hope so.
Your number one ought to be a pretty good indication that you got a good chance of getting there. This is the
you lose a lot. You have to rebuild that roster again, but we'll see.
But hey, he did. Yep. What roster did he inherit?
Right.
Obviously, Kobe Brown's a great player, but he kept him around. I just think the trick with it is life is all about balance, Stephen. You know, if you over lean to any one side, you get off balance, you fall over. Balancing the importance of the NCAA tournament versus everything else that happened this whole year is something I think we struggle with because there's so much emphasis on this part of it. And hey, man, this is obviously the part where if you win, people remember you forever in the NCAA tournament. But yes, it matters. Yes, it was a very disappointing performance by Missouri, and it's a blown chance to get to the Sweet 16. They blew it, and that's all fair. But you just don't want to overemphasize that over every other thing that happened this year. That stuff, to me, if I'm a Missouri fan, is more important. Because what really ends up happening in the NCAA tournament is you just keep taking cracks at it, and if you put yourself in a position to have a team that's good enough to advance, every once in a while things fall your way.
Right or wrong, though, that's how a team's season is judged,
right?
How they did in the NCAA tournament.
But if you're a fan, you ought to be, to me, looking at it like, okay, what's the overall direction of our program? Are we likely to be back here with the coach that we have? I would sure think your answer's got to be yes if you're a Missouri fan right now.
You sure hope so. All right, we will take a break. When we come back, we will talk to our good friend Adam Teicher after this on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHP. Stephen St. John and Nate Buchanan. You liked going to the WBC, didn't you?
Oh, man, I had a blast. I had an absolute blast. It was really fun. The game was crazy on Saturday. That was the game that USA came from behind to beat Venezuela.
USA!
Grand slam by Trey Turner, which was just really cool. Really cool. It was fun. Great crowd. Place was sold out. Fans were going nuts the whole time, having fun. Big party. Loved it. Had never been to that stadium before, the Marlins stadium.
Nice.
Yeah, it was nice. It was, it's one of those rolling roof ones, which kind of made me laugh a little bit because it's like really nice outside in Miami. I'm a little on the warm side, but they had it. They had the roof closed and the air conditioning on, you know.
Good. The United States beat Cuba to advance. That was the first semifinal. They've advanced to the championship game. They will take on the winner of Mexico and Japan, which will take place tonight at 6 o'clock on FS1. I actually watched that game.
Yeah.
I wonder why. All right, let's go to Adam Teicher now from ESPN. What's up, Adam? How are you?
Good. How are you guys doing today, Stephen?
Doing well, except for Mizzou blew it against Princeton and Kansas lost to a shirtless coach. Other than that, everything's going great for us. But K-State did it. They're going to go to the Final Four. I'll tell you that right now.
Yeah. Is there anything better than when your team kind of at this point of the NCAA tournament is still alive? I mean, if you're a high seed, you know, you're a Alabama or even a 2 or 3, like a Texas or a Gonzaga, you're thinking, okay, this is going to be our year. And if you're a lower seed, you're thinking like Michigan State, for instance, you're thinking, okay, we're still alive. We've kind of exceeded expectations for this season. I mean, it's just a great time of year to – and you're sort of playing with house money, so it's just kind of a great what a great tournament if you're still alive for 16 teams, man. It's a great way of a time of year for sure.
Adam, maybe you didn't hear me. You offered no pushback. I said K-State's going to the Final Four. They got to play Michigan State. Don't you got something to say about that?
Yeah, well, we know it was a ridiculous statement on your part.
All right, then. That's all I wanted.
Why acknowledge an ridiculous statement? I think that's going to be a fun game. I'm really looking forward to that one. I wish that was here in KC, but it's still going to be a fun game.
Any chance you make the trip out to New York to Madison Square Garden to watch Michigan State and K-State or no?
No, I will not, but I'll be watching for sure.
Do you? So what's your level of confidence? Because this did surprise me. We looked at the odds and we looked at the numbers, and Vegas started off with Michigan State as a one-point favorite over the three-seed Kansas State.
And where is it now?
It's one right now. Yeah, it's right there.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it's going to be a good game. It'll be a competitive game. Michigan State's got some flaws. I mean, this is not one of their better teams for sure. Can't believe they won that game hitting only two threes because they were, I think, third. Going into the game, they were third in the country over the season in three-point field goal percentage. And they were like 2 of 16. I didn't think they could beat a good team that way. So it was a crazy game if you watched it. And I just think it's going to be a great matchup against K-State. Can't wait to see it.
I think that is going to be an excellent game coming up on Thursday between K-State and Michigan State. So what were you doing in Des Moines?
ESPN had me covered in there. I think I'm probably the closest person they have working who lives in closest person to Des Moines. So they said, "Hey, come go on up and write about the first two rounds of the tournament up there." So I was covering the tournament. I was probably 25 feet from Eric Musselman when he climbed up on that courtside table and took his shirt off and started leading the cheers of Pig Suey. It was quite a moment for sure.
You got an eyeful, didn't you? Huh?
More than I wanted to see.
Okay, so you're a Michigan State man. You're there covering this tournament, and so you can give an unbiased view because I've enjoyed hearing the different reactions to Eric Musselman taking his shirt off and celebrating. I don't need to tell you these Kansas fans are not happy with this at all, and they don't like it. And so I'd like to get your thoughts on this. What's your reaction, Eric Musselman, shirtless and dancing around?
I hope I never see Tom Izzo doing that. Let's put it that way. That's something, you know, you just can't unsee. So I'm hoping I never see that. But you know what? It's a fun moment, and you know, I understand why if you're a Kansas fan, that happened to Michigan State, and Michigan State was a one seed, and that happened, I'd be like, what a Bush League, you know, thing to do, what a minor league thing to do. But you know what, in the emotions of the moment, I kind of get it, you know? I mean, you know, and he talked after the game, he was really good, saying, you know, I've been coaching for a long time, this is probably the best win I've ever been a part of, you know, you know, if you watch the game, I think you understand what he was talking about. So, I wouldn't be happy about it if I was a Kansas fan. But now that the emotions have died down a little bit, I'd be, you know, hey, understand where the guy was coming from. It's a big moment for him and in his career and for his team. So I feel good for him.
Well, let's see what this red-ass Kansas fan has to say. Nate, you're on with Adam Tyson.
I actually think celebrate the victories that happen in life, man. Life is hard. You know, coaching is hard. Getting, you know, like you said, that guy, how long has Musselman been coaching? If this is one of the biggest.
What did you say earlier? You didn't like it.
No, I said I don't have a problem with them taking the shirt off. I don't like the coach that said, you know, if Kansas wants us to hand us another end their season in another sport, let us know. I think that's different. That's different than celebrating your own achievement, you know. And and like it's like this World Baseball Classic thing. I'm seeing these guys, they don't like when these, you know, Venezuelan players are celebrating after a big strikeout. Oh, you're waking up the other team. If the other team's not awake in this game right now, you know, what's their problem? I think life is hard for all of us. When you get a dub in life, enjoy it, man. Celebrate. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, you know?
Yeah, and you hit on the proper thing here, Nate. I mean, when you say, well, let's hand Kansas a loss in another sport, that's aimed at Kansas. That is directly aimed at taunting the Kansas fans. I don't think what Eric Musselman was doing there was aimed at the Kansas fans. I think he went right up. I mean, you didn't maybe know it from what you on the pictures or the video you saw, but that was right in front of the Arkansas fans. I mean, he went to that particular spot because that's where the Arkansas section was. So, and maybe you didn't know that if you didn't see the maybe that wasn't clear in the video or the pictures you saw. But so I don't think that was aimed in any way at Kansas or he meant that as any kind of slight against them.
This guy takes his shirt off more than a Kardashian. Trust me, this is nothing new to any SEC fan. All right, this guy gets shirtless for any, and he just he has a way. It's one of those guys that if that's your coach, man, do you love him? He does it all. He's celebrating. But if you go, if your team loses to him, even during a game, he can get under your skin with his antics on the bench and all this other stuff. And so, yeah, he's celebrating with his team, but Adam, he has a way of pissing off everyone else in the SEC, trust me.
Yeah, well, I kind of get that, but just seeing this particular incident, I don't know why, if you're a Kansas fan, you'd like hate this guy for life or anything like that.
I'm for the personalities too. You know, let's have some fun. Let's have some personalities. It's personality driven. In terms of the game itself, and let's take it from KU's side on that. First of all, Adam, we had Greg Gurley on before this weekend started. And at that time, the talk was, hey, Bill Self is saying he's going to be ready. He wants to coach. And I asked Greg, I said, man, is he not pushing it? Like, I'm not a health expert, but boy, you talk to doctors and this process he's been through, it's usually a couple weeks to recover, and this is some serious stuff. You don't want to mess with your health. And you know, Greg said, look, that's a question for Bill Self, not for me. But he ends up not coaching this weekend. I will say, as a Kansas fan, I think that, yes, there's a good chance maybe they win that game if Bill Self, a healthy Bill Self coaches. I'm glad he didn't coach, even if it costs him a game here, because this is the type of stuff you don't mess with your health, especially when it comes to your heart and things like that. What was your reaction just to the way that whole thing played out as you were covering it this weekend from Bill Self's standpoint?
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting that he went to Des Moines in the first place if he wasn't going to coach. So that tells me that maybe he thought he was going to coach and that things just weren't, he just didn't feel strong enough, you know, that he sort of changed his mind at some point and decided, you know, hey, for the Howard game, hey, we can probably win this game without me. And then for the next game, he just wasn't feeling quite right, maybe where he thought he might be at this time. So, we'll never know what the answer is there. I mean, you know, it's entirely possible. I mean, it wasn't going to take much more for Kansas to win that game. So, 72-71. So it's entirely possible they would have won that game if he'd be coaching. But you're right. I mean, that's the right perspective, that he probably did the right thing for the rest of his life by not coaching that game. So, it probably is the good thing in the long run.
Did you think that the call on McCuller, the blocking foul at the end, was a controversial call at all, or do you think that was a clear defensive foul?
Yeah, no, I think you could have gone either way with that. And, you know, those things are so tough when you're sitting there watching them. I mean, I'm right there. Those things are so tough to make a quick judgment on, you know, without having the replays and all that. It's almost impossible. So, I think he probably made the right call there, but it could have gone the other way. I mean, those things are so bang-bang that those things it could have gone the other way, no doubt about it.
The bench for KU I thought was an issue all year long. When they got into foul trouble in this game, I guess, how big of a factor do you think that played in it for KU? And is there anything maybe that stood out to you otherwise from the game?
Yeah, well, when Adams got his fourth foul, I think that was a turning point of the game. I mean, maybe not initially. Kansas, held on for a little while. But I do feel like that was a turning point in the game, you know. It's funny. I thought watching Arkansas in their first round game against Illinois, Illinois was just overwhelmed by Arkansas's athleticism and their length and their depth. And I'm thinking, okay, this is the kind of team that maybe could give Kansas some problems. And so I was kind of surprised by that first half. Kansas really handled everything really well, but I think that depth did start to show in the second half when Kansas got into a little bit of foul trouble. And Arkansas did too. They lost some guys, but Arkansas was able to get some things done with their bench, and Kansas wasn't able to do it.
All right, so I guess to put the finishing touches on that one, Adam, for Kansas, maybe post-game reaction a little bit, like where the team is headed from here. They're going to be losing guys like Jalen Wilson and Kevin McCullough. Grady Dick, I assume, is going to go pro, but I guess we don't know for sure yet. How much of a, I don't know, reload or whatever it is do you think Kansas has in front of them this time around?
Yeah, I mean, you know, without knowing that program, I honestly had not seen Kansas all year long, so I'm not as familiar, certainly, as you are, Nate, about what they've got going on, who they got coming in. But as long as Bill Self's coaching, I mean, they still have some good players. I feel like they're going to be in a great place, you know. I mean, you know, 1-point loss to a team that's got in the NCAA tournament, to a team that's going to have some players go on to play in the NBA like Arkansas is, what's the shame in that? I just don't see that. You know, Kansas lost so much last year. I mean, I made a point to ask Jalen Wilson this after the game. You know, everybody was disappointed, and right, understandably so. I mean, they lost a tough game earlier in the tournament than they were thinking. But when all the emotion dies down and you have a chance to think about this season, what's the one thing, what are you going to remember about this season? And, you know, he talked about how tight they were as a group, and I hope that is what he remembers, and not that they didn't, you know, that they didn't get out of the second round, or that they didn't defend their national championship or anything like that, because it seems like a bunch of good kids who deserve to have that memory and not have bad memories of this season. You know what I mean?
Adam Teicher from ESPN is our guest. He's up in Des Moines covering the NCAA tournament. Adam, may I ask you some Chiefs questions, please?
Why? What happened? Did something happen with the Chiefs last week?
You know, it's a little bit here, a little bit there. So I got a couple of them. First of all, what they did do. I've always admired Drew Tranquil as a linebacker whenever the Chiefs would play the Chargers or just watching the Chargers. You know, like career high with 144 tackles and 5 sacks, and is got a rep as a good coverage linebacker. I thought that was a real nice under-the-radar signing a couple of days ago, 1 year. And it could be up to a $5 million contract. I think he can come in. It's going to be interesting to see how they utilize him, but he's a pretty damn good player they got for a really reasonable contract.
Yeah, I'm wondering about his role and Mike Edwards' role as well. But
right.
I know the Chiefs really like those guys. And those guys are, you know, got some things done for their respective teams last year. So, you know, I know the Chiefs were pretty fired up about both those signings. I talked to some people who were really encouraged about what they were able to get done on that. I guess it was Friday when they signed both those guys. So it is going to be interesting to see the roles for both of them, though, and how much they play and what they can do. But for Edwards, I mean, it certainly is going to be one of their top three safeties, if not a starter. And then Tranquil, I don't know. That one's less clear to me exactly how they're going to use him along with Willie Gay and Nick Bolton and Leo Chenal. But obviously they've got a plan for it, so it's going to be interesting to see what it is.
Okay, so wide receiver is the other question that's the hot topic right now. And now a couple of other targets are no longer available. Adam Thielen signs with Carolina. Brandon Cooks gets traded to the Cowboys for a fifth and a sixth rounder. And so they're off the board. And now Jeremy Fowler was on SportsCenter yesterday saying that the Chiefs are still one of the teams that are interested in Odell Beckham Jr. And the thought around the league is they're going to try to do something at wide receiver, whether it be sign Odell Beckham Jr., trade for DeAndre Hopkins, or something else. Do you believe that, or do you think they're comfortable enough with MVS, Sky Moore, and Kadarius Toney to where maybe they could just do like a minor, like a Justin Watson type, and then go in and look to draft another receiver? What do you think they're going to do at receiver?
Yeah, no, they got to do something. I mean, they can't go into the training camp certainly with the way they are there. They got to make some moves. So you know, one of the above, if not all of the above, they'll try to get done. You know, Odell Beckham, you wonder about that one a little bit. I mean, you better not have high expectations for a guy who's over 30 and has, you know, been as injured as he's been. I mean, that doesn't mean he can't come back and be a productive player for you, but you better not expect that. You know, that to me is kind of a cherry on top kind of thing. You better not count on anything there. So, you know, even if they get that one done, they better do something else. So I think it's going to be a combination of things. I don't think there'll just be one guy coming in here. I think it'll be more than that. And it's going to be interesting to see which way the Chiefs go on this. You know, the one thing that they've really resisted over the years since Brent Veach has been their general manager is giving up good money and or good draft picks for an older player. That's not something they've done. When they've traded for an Orlando Brown or a Frank Clark, I mean, those guys have been, you know, younger. Those guys were earlier in their careers. And the same thing for all the free agents they brought in under Brett Veach. It's been all guys who have been younger. And when they have brought in an older guy, like a Carlos Dunlap, for instance, or a Le'Veon Bell or whatever, it's been for 1 year and not for great money. So, you know, for the Chiefs to dive into Odell Beckham Jr. for the money he may be asking for would be totally out of character for the way the Chiefs operate there. And I put DeAndre Hopkins in that category, too, just because of his age and the fact they're probably going to have to give up a good draft pick for him as well as his big contract. So, you know, beware on both of those things. I mean, not to say the Chiefs wouldn't do it or try to make it work, but that's just so out of character for the way they've operated to give big money and or good draft picks for those guys. So we'll see where those are headed. But I do feel like they have to get something done one way or the other.
What did you think of the movement on the offensive line? They signed Juwan Taylor. And then they watch as Orlando Brown Jr. signs with the Cincinnati Bengals. Now that the dust has settled on that a little bit, what's your reaction to those moves?
Yeah, I mean, interesting. You know, and Taylor is the perfect example of what I was talking about earlier. He's only, I think, still 25, right? So, you know, he should be headed into the best years of his career. So, you know, if you're going to give good money to somebody like that, that's the way you want to do it. Now, whether, you know, he can be an upgrade over Orlando Brown, I don't know. I mean, you know, the fact that he has not played left tackle is has to be a concern. Now, it worked out fairly well for Orlando Brown, but can the Chiefs coach Taylor up that way? You know, it's going to be interesting to see how that one develops, or do they do something else and Taylor plays right tackle? So, go a lot of directions. I mean, I think the Chiefs now, they have the flexibility to go in a lot of different ways during the early rounds of the draft. So it's going to be interesting to see which way they do go with that. But I feel like if you're going to be spending big money, spend it on a guy with a lot of upside. And Juwan Taylor certainly fits in that category.
You got to expect they're going to add a defensive line as well. Right now, where it stands, what's the most important? And they have enough draft picks, and they still have some, you know, room after, you know, taking advantage of the opportunity to create some more cap space with, you know, by maneuvering with Mahomes' contract. They could add a free agent. They could make a trade. They got plenty of draft picks. They'll address all these needs. But what's the need right now that stands out to you that's the most pressing?
Well, I think they need to look. You mean on the defensive line?
Just anywhere on the team.
Well, wide receiver is right up there if it's not number one. But the defensive line, I think, is another one. You know, they got to surround Chris Jones with some pretty good players. Now, Omenihu is a good start in getting that done. But, you know, that's another young guy who should be heading into the better years of his career. So that's another move that I think has the potential for working out really well for the Chiefs. But, you know, got to surround Chris Jones. Got to do something there as well. So, you know, we'll see what they get done. But I feel like those are the two areas now that are probably the neediest in terms of what the Chiefs have to get done for next year: wide receiver and the defensive line.
You think it's easier to address that defensive line in the draft or wide receiver in the draft?
Well, I think you can do either one. The difference between this year and last year, of course, and the Chiefs have 10 picks, so that's what they did last year. But they had so many in the early rounds last year. You remember they had two in the first and two in the second. They don't have multiple picks in any round now until the fourth. So going to have to choose wisely here and make some pretty good decisions. So, the Chiefs seem to be in that mode where they're looking toward the draft right now. You know, that doesn't mean they can't or won't make some moves between now and then. But I'm wondering whether they don't start looking at both of those areas in the draft. So, we'll see what they finally get done. But I feel like they can do whatever they want here. I mean, I feel like they can find good players with what they have in the draft at both of those positions.
All right, final question for you. Mecole Hardman's still out there, and he battled injury, and it not a great comp, but I remember when Juju Smith-Schuster was out there as a free agent for the first time, didn't get the offer he wanted, so he went back 1 year to Pittsburgh and then ended up signing with Kansas City the next offseason. Any chance the Chiefs and Mecole Hardman might reunite for another year if he's not getting the offer that he wants, or he can come back here and maybe try to improve his value on the free agent market?
Oh, yeah, I could see that happening. I could see the Chiefs signing him to a deal that maybe is similar to the one they signed Juju for last year, with not a lot of money but a lot of incentives. And then Hardman would, come back, take another swing at it, and hopefully he would stay healthy for his sake this year and get the contract he's looking for next year. So, until he signs somewhere else or the Chiefs make a move to bring in a receiver, I could see that happening, no doubt.
Adam, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon.
Hey, good stuff, guys. Talk to you then.
That is Adam Teicher. We'll take a break back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Drake Jason Justice. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we'll have Jared Sutton to talk college basketball with us. As Mizzou loses to Princeton, Kansas loses to Arkansas. Saw somebody tweet out that because Kansas lost to Arkansas in the bowl game and in the tournament, that for a whole year that Kansas should be referred to as Kinsaw. What do you think of that?
Well, as a person who spent portion of my life living in Arkansas City,
right
on the Arkansas River, I pushed back against that. I don't think we agreed to those terms.
Kinsaw.
That would be pretty funny, though. I'm from Kansas City, Kinsaw.
Right. So, that was just thrown out there by an Arkansas guy, so I don't think that's going to stay.
Why don't they know how to pronounce Arkansas in Arkansas?
I don't understand it. I don't know.
There's probably some history behind that, but I don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I know in Ark City, it's Arkansas City, and it's on the Arkansas River.
Who has the most NCAA tournament wins by a head coach as the worst seed? Most NCAA tournament wins.
Okay, his upset victory.
Like an 8 over 9.
Tom Izzo.
Yeah, Tom Izzo, 16.
He's made it to a bunch of Final Fours, and it doesn't seem like very often his team was like the top seed.
16, Jim Boeheim, 15, Raleigh Massimino, 11.
Jim Boeheim was pissed after every one of those wins, by the way.
Lute Olson, all that. Boy, he looks like a joy to be around.
He just seems like a miserable person.
Just to be in a room with.
I don't know if he was always that way or if he's just grown into a miserable person.
Oh, Mitch Lightfoot's tweet just popped up. that's getting a lot of... He's got over 1,000 retweets.
Mitch doesn't seem to mind, you know?
He's just giving you his thoughts.
He's probably getting a lot of K-State pushback this weekend.
Great game by Arkansas. Congratulations on the win. Proud of our guys fighting through adversity all year. That being said, my coach has never jumped on a table shirtless for a round of 32 victory. Good. A lot of anger, man. A lot of anger.
Is that anger or is that just arrogance? A little saltiness? Salty?
I think a little of both. We'll be back after this on WHB.